Welcome to Music History Monday for March 11th, 2024. I'm Bob Greenberg, and the title for today's podcast is An Opera Profane and Controversial, Verdi's Rigoletto. If you haven't already, please consider joining me on my subscription site at patreon.com/robertgreenbergmusic, where I blog, vlog, podcast, pontificate, review, and bloviate 4 to 6 times a week. We mark the first performance on March 11th, 1851, 173 years ago today, of Giuseppe Verdi's opera Rigoletto at Venice's storied Teatro La Fenice, the Phoenix Theater. Projects. We set the scene. The year was 1849. Giuseppe Fortunino Francesco Verdi, 1813-1901, was, at the age of 36, the most famous and popular composer of opera living and working in Italy. Living in his hometown of Busseto, in the Parma region of northern Italy, Verdi spent the last days of 1849 and the first weeks of 1850 considering future opera projects. He sat down and drew up a list of stories that captured his interest, a list filled with literary masterworks, old and new. At the top of the list were Shakespeare's King Lear, Hamlet, and The Tempest. There was Kean by Alexander Dumas Pere, and Victor Hugo's Marion Delorme, Ruy Blas, and Le Roi s'amuse, the King's Jester. Among other works on the list were Lord George Gordon Byron's Cain, Jean-Baptiste Racine's Phaedra, Pedro Calderon de la Barca's A Secret Grievance, A Secret Revenge, Vicomte François René de Chateaubriand's Attila, and Count Vittorio Alfieri's Filippo, which would eventually become the opera Don Carlo. Stifelio. Narrowing things down more than just a bit, Verdi wrote the librettist Francesco Maria Piave, 1810-1876, at his home in Venice, and asked him, per favore, to prepare a draft scenario for Victor Hugo's Le Roi s'amuse, the King's Jester. Piave consented to do so, and additionally suggested some other possible texts, including a play by the French dramatists Émile Silvestre and Eugène Bourgeois, entitled Stifelio. Verdi and Piave went ahead with Stifelio, which was Verdi's 16th of 27 operas. It received its premiere on November 16, 1850, at the Teatro Grande in the city of Trieste, in the northeastern corner of Italy. To say that Stifelio has a controversial plot is a major understatement. It's a drama about a Protestant minister who leaves his home to preach, during which time his lonely wife takes a lover. Having confessed her infidelity, the opera reaches its climax as the preacher forgives her her adultery while delivering a sermon from his pulpit. All in all, it was a most unusual subject for an opera composed and performed in Catholic Italy. Just days before Stifelio's opening, the local censors in Trieste exercised their prerogative and savaged the opera, cutting out whole sections of what they called offensive text. Those poor, offended censors hardly knew where to start. OMG, the protagonists were Protestant. Actual verses from the Bible were sung on stage. An adulterous woman was portrayed sympathetically, and then she was forgiven by her husband. Various pieces of religious paraphernalia were used as props. By the time the censors had finished with it, little of Stifelio was left untouched. Verdi was apoplectic, and he accused the censors of having, quote, castrated, unquote, his opera. Somehow, Verdi, Piave, and the cast managed to stitch together what was left and went on with the show. It was nothing short of a miracle that Stifelio wasn't a complete flop. It was only a partial flop, because its sympathetic audience, including the critics, were aware of its 11th hour demolition. It's important that we know something of Stifelio's fate, because when censors threatened Verdi's next project, Rigoletto, Verdi was prepared to go to war. Rigoletto. Despite his grief over what happened to Stifelio, Verdi couldn't afford to sulk for very long. He had just signed a contract to provide the Teatro La Fenice in Venice with an opera to be premiered just 4 months after the Stifelio debacle in Trieste. Well, talk about deadline pressure. Now, just moments ago, we observed that before composing and producing Stifelio, Verdi had asked Francesco Piave to prepare a draft scenario of Victor Hugo's play, Le Roi s'amuse, the King's Jester. It was this play that Verdi decided to set for Venice and La Fenice. The more Verdi thought about it, the more excited he became at the prospect of turning Victor Hugo's play into an opera. However, Verdi understood that an opera about a nobleman who, among his hobbies, rapes and traffics in teenage girls could be perceived as controversial. Aware then that the censors could put a nix on the entire project at any moment, Verdi urgently wrote to Piave, who lived there in Venice, expressing his unalloyed enthusiasm for the project. Quote, "Oh, the King's Jester is the greatest plot and perhaps the greatest drama of modern times, and the Hunchback is a creation worthy of Shakespeare. It's a subject that cannot fail. You know that 6 years ago, when Mocenigo suggested Hernani to me, I exclaimed, 'Yes, by God, that's the right one.' Now, like a bolt of lightning, like an inspiration, I thought of the King's Jester, and I said the same thing. Yes, by God, that's the right one. Turn Venice upside down to make the censors permit this subject. As soon as you get this letter, get yourself four legs." We can assume here that Verdi is telling Piave to get on a horse and run all over the city and try to find an influential person who can get you permission for the King's Jester. Don't go to sleep. Get moving. Hurry. Unquote. In order to get the story past the censors, Verdi drew up a long list of issues that he believed he had to deal with, including the opera's title. Verdi again wrote Piave, quote, "As for the title, if we cannot keep the King's Jester, which would be perfect, the title has to be La Maledizione, the curse. The whole theme lies in that curse, which also becomes the moral. An unhappy father who weeps over his daughter's honor, which has been stolen, mocked by a court jester whom the father curses. And this curse strikes the jester in the most terrifying way. All this seems moral to me and great, stupendously great. The whole theme lies in that curse." Unquote. Verdi was right to be worried about the censors. Victor Hugo's play is a controversial tale about a French monarch, Francis I, who is portrayed as a lecher and a rapist. There is no hero in the story. Rather, the protagonist is a nasty, hunchbacked court jester whose own daughter, named Bianca in the play, is raped by the boss, King Francis. At a time, 1850, when kings and emperors and princes were increasingly being perceived across Europe as anachronistic and repressive feudal dinosaurs, the censors in Venice, as employees of those very same dinosaurs, were certainly not likely to approve such a libretto. On December 1, 1850, the censor's decision regarding Piave's already sanitized libretto was received. The verdict, sent in the name of His Excellency the Signor Military Governor Cavalier de Gorzkowski, stated that His Excellency, quote, deplores the fact that the poet Piave and the famous Maestro Verdi chose such a repugnant example of immorality and obscene triviality as the plot of the libretto called La Maledizione, the curse. His Excellency has therefore found that he must absolutely prohibit this production, and at the same time wants me to warn the directors of La Fenice not to insist further on this matter. Signed, Luigi Martello, Director of the Office of Public Order, unquote. Do not insist further on this matter? What, were they kidding? This was Giuseppe Verdi the authorities were dealing with, a man for whom the words, "the authorities said no," had, after his experience with Stifelio, very little meaning. According to Verdi himself, the censor's decision made him, quote, go crazy, unquote. We do not presently have the time or the space to discuss in detail the remarkable correspondence that now went back and forth between Verdi, Piave, the directors of the Teatro La Fenice, and the censors. Verdi's letters raged. Piave's were filled with wheedling apologies, and the seemingly endless revisions suggested by the censors were rejected by Verdi over and over again. In the end, it was Verdi's reputation, the sheer weight his name carried, and his post-Stifelio refusal to be cowed by the authorities that won the day. The censors, under tremendous pressure to find a workable solution, blinked first and agreed to a compromise that restored almost entirely the scenes originally deemed to be unacceptable. On December 29, 1850, Verdi agreed to the following changes and provisos. 1. The location was changed from the court of France to a small independent Italian state. No family names could be used, and thus King Francis I of France became the Duke of Mantua. 2. Scenes involving the rape of Bianca, a character now called Gilda, would, quote, preserve the necessary decency, unquote, whatever in fact that was supposed to mean. 3. Various plot devices were to be altered so as not, again, to offend public decency. 4. The opera was to be ready for production by March 1, 1851. 5. The characters were to be given names appropriate to the location of the setting, and the opera itself was to be called Rigoletto. 6. The censors had the right of approval over the final version of the libretto. Yeah, despite Verdi's deep misgivings over that final proviso, it was time to get to work. He had all of 6 weeks' time to compose and cast the opera, prepare and proofread the score and the parts, rehearse the singers and stage the opera. Good luck, dude. Costumes and sets would have to be designed and created on the fly. And still, Verdi had to worry about the censor's final decision on the final version of the libretto. It was in a letter from Piave, dated January 26, 1851, that Verdi got the good news. Quote, "Dear Verdi, sound the trumpets, Gloria in excelsis Deo, Alleluia, Alleluia, At last, yesterday at 3 p.m, the libretto of our Rigoletto was approved, having reached the directors of La Fenice safe and sound, with no broken bones and no amputations." Unquote. Verdi was justifiably relieved and pretty much as pleased as he would ever allow himself to be. He wrote to Piave by return mail, quote, "Praised be to heaven, Rigoletto will go on, and we hope it will go well. I am happy about this. From the time you left here," meaning Verdi's home in Busetto a few weeks before, "you can't believe how much work I have done. I have only the final duet left. It is true that in recent days I have had such a terrible stomachache that I was afraid of being really ill. Goodbye to Rigoletto. I rested 3 days, and today I am fine." Unquote. Verdi finished the opera on February 5th, 1851. He told Piave to reserve rooms at the Hotel Europa on the Grand Canal on an upper floor so that he could get some air and sunshine, and arranged to have a grand piano delivered there as well. He arrived in Venice on February 19th, having traveled the last leg of the journey from Padua to Venice on the brand new railroad line, only the fourth such line to be built in Italy. Verdi had 3 weeks to prepare Rigoletto for performance. While Verdi was in Venice, madly trying to produce Rigoletto in the little time allotted to him, his live-in girlfriend and soon-to-be his second wife, Giuseppina Strepponi, 1815 to 1897, remained back in Busetto. She hated being in what was the small provincial town of Busetto without Verdi. As a single woman, and a soprano, no less, cohabitating with a widowed man, she was considered by the locals to be a shameless strumpet and was treated poorly, particularly when Verdi was not around. She left the house only to attend Mass, where she was surrounded by a ring of empty space, even during the most crowded services. It was an awful position for Giuseppina to be in, and unfortunately, it became the rule rather than the exception as Verdi's career blossomed. In particular, Giuseppina, or Peppina, as Verdi called her, disliked Verdi's trips to Venice, chiefly because she did not trust Verdi's Venetian-based friend and collaborator and Rigoletto librettist, Francesco Piave. Piave was a notorious womanizer, and Peppina was deeply concerned about Piave's influence on her Giuseppe, especially when Giuseppe and Francesco were off alone producing an opera surrounded by singers and chorus members and dancers. Given Giuseppina Strepponi's own experience as a singer, which included 4 accidental pregnancies out of who knows how many couplings with heaven knows how many different men, nobody knew better than Giuseppina how easy were sexual dalliances in the theatrical world. She called Piave il gran diavolo, the big devil, and though she was genuinely fond of him, she didn't trust him in the least. While Verdi was in Venice, madly preparing for the premiere of Rigoletto, Strepponi wrote, quote, "Thank the big devil for the lines he wrote me, and tell him not to show you his friendship by leading you astray. I know he has a great talent for that occupation. Please exhort him to preserve his erotic zeal for friends who more closely resemble himself." Unquote. Peppina's distrust acknowledged. Rigoletto is Francesco Piave's single finest libretto, and Verdi's setting of that libretto is one of the great masterworks of the operatic repertoire. In tomorrow's extended, double-length Dr. Bob Prescribes post, our examination of Rigoletto will continue, illustrated with video excerpts drawn from the Prescribed DVD. Until then, thank you. to sample and download one or all of my many courses on subjects musical produced by the Great Courses / The Teaching Company, please visit my website at robertgreenbergmusic.com.